Welcome to Unsquish the Fish. The podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
What is up, Dolphin fans? Another episode of Unsquish the Fish. Who else is giving you all this awesome content over the next 5 weeks when the drought of sports and especially football is just going to kill everybody? Because I hate this time of year. It's the worst. The time between mini camp and training camp, it feels like a year. It's just nothing going on. What's up, Keith? I got Keith here today through FaceTime. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm here. We got through minicamp, OTAs without any major injury. That's one good thing. How you feeling about it?
Man, I tell you what, all the buzz I'm hearing about this receiving core that we've got right now, man, we've talked about it before. I'm trying not to get overly excited because I know minicamp's minicamp. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate to the field on Sunday afternoon, but I mean, the buzz about these receivers, man, they're owning it. I mean, they're beasts out there. So, but then again, I'm going to be a little bit of a pessimist, and I'm going to say that we've heard it every year, every year.
I don't know if we heard it like we heard it this year, though. And the thing we're hearing more this year is the consistency of Tannehill. Like, he's getting better and better and better. He just continues to improve. He never seems to stop improving, which it goes into what we've said in the past, that a lot of Tannehill's issues were less talent and more experience. He didn't come into the league with all the quarterback experience that most of the other quarterbacks did, and I think that's why you see this drastic improvement year after year.
Yeah, that's, you know, when you did the Tannehill show, we talked about that and talked about how he had basically 1 year of experience in college and then he was basically thrown into the fire as an NFL quarterback. And he has progressively gotten better every single year that he's played. Has he had the talent around him that he's got this year? I'm going to have to say no on that. I mean, I think that this year is going to be a huge year for Tannehill. It's going to have to be, really. But having some veteran talent like Jennings on there and then these just absolute studs of Parker and Landry, I mean, it's kind of hard not to get excited.
And don't forget about Stills.
True.
And don't forget about Cameron.
And just keep adding to the list.
I heard Cameron's dropped the ball a lot during minicamp, but they were saying that was never the case before. James Walker. Now, I found me another, I won't say favorite, like Omar Kelly's still my favorite, but I found me another guy I really like to follow and read all his stuff because he's nonstop writing about the Dolphins, and that's James Walker, ESPN. You familiar with him at all?
Yes.
This morning for probably 30, 40 minutes, I didn't realize he wrote so many articles. Like almost every single day he's writing something about the Dolphins. He's a good follow. He has a lot of good information. It's nice. I probably should expand my horizons. I'm too a little narrow in what I read. I read a couple people and then that's it. I need to start. And then I read the blog. Like I read more blogs than I read from the actual writers, honestly. Right. Tell you the truth, because I enjoy it. I like it when it's all swayed towards the Dolphins and how we're going to be great. I what can I say?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a pessimist. We've heard that a few years here and there, and we wind up being mediocre. And it's just with the talent that this team has this year, from what we're hearing, I mean, this has to be a playoff team. It has to be a playoff team.
This is a playoff team. This team is 10-6 this year, and we're going to the playoffs, and we have a championship caliber defense. So in that case, the sky's the limit with that. This team gets into the playoffs, the sky's the limit, because that defense can take us really far. That's a really good defense. And I'm going to assume that we're going to get in on the backbone, or on the back, I should say, of our defense. I'm just assuming that.
Well, I mean, defense, we've seen this year after year, the defense can only carry you so far. And we've seen it happen the past few years where the defense has played extremely well all season long. The offense hasn't produced anything. And then the last three or four games of the season, when it really matters and it really counts, for us to either have to win out or win three of four or, you know, two out of the three, the defense falls apart. And it's because the defense has spent the majority of the year on the field, and they're exhausted. They're tired. I know that I've heard from, you know, reading a couple things, how the defensive line is just going to be – nobody is going to run the football on Miami this year. It's just not going to happen. I don't care who you are. I mean, if you're AP, maybe. Okay.
Well, we don't play AP, so we're good there. Unless he gets traded to Dallas.
My point is it's going to have to be that kind of caliber of running back to run on that defensive line. That defensive line is stout. They are beasts up front. They are no longer going to be, you know, the defensive line that's giving up, you know, 5 yards right off the bat. It's going to be a stuffing defensive line that, I mean, I think teams are going to be forced to pass on us, which in turn makes me start wondering about our secondary. Well, is our secondary going to be able to hold it down?
Well, they've been holding it down. I mean, I think they're a good secondary. With Delmas back there and Grimes, we're gonna be, and Rashad Jones.
Jones.
Yeah, we're going to be good. And we got enough other cornerbacks that can play. It's going to be fine. I'm not worried about our secondary. And I think our linebackers are going to thrive because they're not going to be getting blocked so much. They're going to be running free. It's going to be a good defense, man.
I think the linebackers are actually going to have a field day because we talked about it, you know, in one of the first shows that we did about that defensive line with Cam Wake and Sue. You've got people that on that defensive line that are going to demand a double team. They're going to demand it almost every down. And you can't double team everybody. You just can't. And when you double team somebody, you're leaving somebody else open, and you're leaving a linebacker with the ability to shoot the gap and get pressure on the quarterback, which we haven't really done all that great in the past. But I think adding Sue, I mean, the more and more it goes forward and gets closer to the season, the more and more I'm seeing how big — I knew it was a big addition, you know, no kick to Sue's size, but I knew how big of an addition he was to that defensive line. But what I'm reading is adding him, adds so many more options for that defense with blitz packaging. I'm probably more excited about that defensive line than anything, though.
Oh, I'm excited about the defensive line, man. Trust me. One thing I'm pretty stoked about is the fact that the NFL, you know, the NFL Network does the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't see a Dolphin 1 from 100 to 40. And I was starting to think, man, besides Sue, because you know they're going to throw Sue in the top 10.
Of course.
Besides Sue, are we going to get shut out? And then all of a sudden, I think it was number 39 and 38. We had back-to-back Dolphins.
Cam Wake and Brent Grimes.
So you're telling me with three guys in the top 40 of the NFL top 100 players all on our defense – you're telling me with the other pieces we have around them on defense, that's not an elite defense? It is. It is. And in ESPN and PFF, and I'm still fuming about it, have the unmitigated gall, as Stephen A. Smith might say, to say we got the worst roster in the AFC East? What do you got? Just, you know what? I see stuff like that, man. I just think whoever put that together, fired. Fired. If I'm your boss, you know what? I read this. I'm like, fired. Get out. Pack your crap. Clear out your locker. You're done. You don't need to be a football analyst.
Well, think about it. How many analysts do you know that have ever, in the history of us watching Miami Dolphin football, has ever given the Miami Dolphins a lot of credit?
There's usually, if you watch, and I watch NFL Insiders, I watch NFL Live, and I, of course, I'll watch NFL Primetime or NFL is it Game Day? I don't know which one is on ESPN. I'll watch all those.
I think it's Game Day.
I can't remember. It's Game Day, the NFL Network one. I don't remember what it's called. And it's usually one. Like, I'll usually see one person mention the Dolphins. Like, I believe that they asked each of them on NFL Insiders. They said, okay, give me one team that's going to surprise us here that's going to the playoffs. One person said, I don't remember what one person said. The other person said the Dolphins, which I love. I love to see it, man. I like to see. I'm sorry. I know that flying under the radar, I guess that's good and all. Whatever. I don't know that that matters to the other teams. I like to see our Dolphins talked up. I like to see them in the national news. I like to see them considered contenders, playoff contenders, championship contenders. I get off on that, man. I like it. I don't like being underrated. It annoys the crap out of me when I see things like we have the worst roster in the AFC East, when I know it's obviously blatantly incorrect. I mean, you add our defense, and then you consider the quarterback situation in Buffalo, in New York. Come on. I mean, you look at our wide receiving core. I mean, come on. You kidding me? Three guys in the top 40 just on our defense alone. It doesn't even make sense. Is there any other team that have three guys in the top 40 on one unit? Probably not. We haven't seen it all yet. When it's all done, I'm going to go through and look and see. And Tannehill's going to break into that top 100 in the NFL next year. He'll be there.
I mean, there's been a lot of skepticism about Tannehill, and you know, the show that we did before, it was, you know, are we sure if, you know, he's going to be the guy? And you know, after he got his contract, obviously the Dolphins are sure he's the guy. I think that Tannehill, he's been behind the eight ball from the get-go. I said that in the show that we did about Tannehill. I think that he's going to break out. I think this is his year to break out. You know, especially with the talent that he's got, I could easily see him for throwing 4,800 yards.
That'd be good. 4,800 yards would be awesome. 30-something touchdowns. Oh God.
I could see that because he threw for almost 4,100 last year.
You show me a team in the NFL. You pick another team in the NFL that has an offense with the capability of putting up the numbers that we could put up. Because all it's going to be about this year is getting the ball into the end zone. Because you know we can get to the red zone. We were number one in the NFL last year in red zone trips. Most red zone trips in the NFL. You get into that red zone. You get into that end zone, I should say. You pair that with this defense. Come on, man.
I mean, come on.
How do we not get 10 wins? I feel like I'm holding back on that. 10 wins, at least 10 wins out of that.
But then again, man, it all comes down to the chemistry of the team. You can have all the talent in the world, but the chemistry of the players playing together and the coach.
That's the difference between Hickey and Ireland. Ireland would go out and get players because he felt they were good, or they felt they were physically gifted, or they felt they were talented. They weren't necessarily good football players as far as the draft goes, or they weren't necessarily good fits to the team, to the scheme. He did that kind of stuff all the time. From Deion Jordan to Danelle Ellerby to Mike Wallace, you can keep naming them. Hickey has done the exact opposite. Every little person he has drafted, every draft pick he has made has been all about how does it work with this team, how does it work with this chemistry. The free agents they got, how are they going to work with Tannehill? Tannehill throws this good, so we're going to go and get wide receivers that do this, and this. I mean, I'm telling you, man.
That's a good point.
That's
a good point.
It's a totally different philosophy from Hickey to Ireland. And it isn't even necessarily about who had the better scouting skills or player evaluation. I'm not even talking about that right now. It's who could take the pieces of a puzzle and make a beautiful picture. When you look at Ireland's, it just looked like a mess. But you look at what Hickey has done, and you can see clearly that the players he have fit what the team needs for the scheme and for the other players around them.
That's a good point. I mean, I hadn't thought about that until you went into detail about it. But you're right. You know, Ireland, we used to give Ireland credit about making that big deal or getting people to give up the farm for something that is just ridiculous.
Yeah, he had those skills. As a GM, he had the skills. He was good with negotiation. He was good. Right. Him and Aponte were good with negotiation with players, with contracts, and he was very good with trades. I mean, he didn't lose trades. Right. He was hated in the NFL a lot because of that, honestly. But he had no clue in the world how to put 53 men together the best way he could. And you can just clearly see after two off seasons, a full year, Hickey has a lot more clue about that. And Tannenbaum's there just to bring it home. He's just bringing it home, man. He has so many connections between his previous life as a GM and his recent life as an agent. He is the reason we got Sue, man. And then people like Tannenbaum. They want to deal with Tannenbaum. They hated Ireland. The other GMs around the league did not like dealing with Ireland.
Well, you know, my question to you is, since you seem to be very confident about, you know, the players that we've got, fitting the chemistry of the team, and basically making the other players around them better, which is huge. It's huge in any sport, especially team sports. But do you think that Philbin is going to be a long-term fix for the head coaching position of the Miami Dolphins?
That's really the question, isn't it?
Do you think that this season is going to dictate whether or not Philbin is going to be a long-term fix for the Dolphins?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I hate to be this way, but if this team goes 8-8 again, I'm pointing the finger in one place. Coach. I just am. Now, we know that Philbin does things well, and other things he doesn't do as well. We know that's a fact. We know that he creates an incredible game plan. That is what he did in Green Bay. He didn't even bring along Aaron Rodgers. He wasn't the reason Aaron Rodgers became great. He wasn't the one developing Aaron Rodgers. He didn't even call plays as an offensive coordinator. He created the game plan. That's his number one thing. We know he's organized as a coach. We know he looks at all aspects as we would expect a coach to do. We know he embraces technology. He embraces analytics and a lot of the other even bigger things than that that they're starting to do now to figure out what players can and can't handle in practice in games as far as how many reps, how much you can push them. There's some amazing things they're doing now that some teams have caught on to, and the Dolphins are one of them, and we know Philbin embraces all that. We also know that when players tend to be even the least bit challenging, he does not handle that well or doesn't want to handle it, one or the other. He doesn't seem to anyway. From the outside point of view, we have so little to go on as fans, especially. We are so far from the inside, it's not even funny. We pretty much see what they want us to see for the most part, but certain things you just can't hide, period. Absolutely. When a player leaves, when players leave and then they say yada, 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 this, that, and the other, you know, they can't hide that. When Audric leaves, says, I didn't get along with the coach, which was surprising. Not surprising, just... I mean, I know we liked Audric. Audric was a good player for us.
Yes, yes.
But then on the other hand, Audric was also one-third of those three guys that really manned the inside last year that got shredded between him, Mitchell, and Starks. And two of the three are gone. And Earl Mitchell, if he doesn't play well, they'll just put Mosley in there. That's part of what I think Mosley's there for.
Absolutely.
My opinion. But Philbin has to coach this team well. Now, the first year, we noticed that he would put in good game plans, or the first couple years, but the halftime adjustments were horrible. Last year, that seemed to fix itself, because for most of the year, we were the number one scoring team in the third quarter. So, obviously, he figured out how to do some halftime adjustments as well. So, you're going to have to take the good with the bad with Philbin. You know what he is, and you know what he isn't. The question is all of that good enough to get this team where it should be with the talent we have?
You know, speaking about the halftime adjustments, you saw that manifest itself the first game of the season against New England. You saw it. And you saw that the adjustment that Miami made at halftime, they came out and just, I mean, I don't know what other way to explain it, just started spanking New England.
But we would have been spanking them, but we had just three obscure fumbles, and they were just one of those things, like I've talked about in a couple shows ago. Fumbles are just one of those things. They just kind of happen sometimes. And we had three of them in that half, in that first half. And that was the only reason we were where we would, the game was where it was, or we would have crushed them that game, destroyed them.
And I agree with that. I mean, I agree with that because we were talking about it. We were at the game. We were talking about the fumbles. The fumbles were killing us. I'm getting more confident in the team, but my confidence is not going up with Philbin. And you're right. He does things very, very well. There's other things that he kind of, I don't want to say shies away from. He just doesn't deal with as good as other things. Player controversy, players with attitude, which has kind of made me a little skeptical about Sue, because we know that Sue has the reputation, quote unquote, of being a dirty player, and he is, you know, in some cases he's been called a not team player, and then some people have sat back and said, on the football field, in practice, he's all about the team. He's all about work ethic. He's all about doing what needs to be done to make himself better, make the team better.
Well, the only person we've really heard knock him as his locker room is Heath Evans. And Heath Evans is known through tighter NFL circles. And the only reason I know this is because I listen to a lot of radio. I read a lot of articles. And Channing Crowder said this very recently. Remember? You know who I'm talking about, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he has – I mean, I know you and I aren't actually in the city of Miami. I'm a little bit in the outskirts. You're way in the outskirts in Tennessee. A little further in the outskirts there. And you're Tennessee 10 by 10. And when he heard Heath Evans say that, he just started to laugh. And he said, yeah, that's Heath, because he knew him. He's just a straight-up coach butt-kisser. That's just pretty much what he is. He's just a straightforward, let's do it for the team, guys. Let's be there. I'm here for you guys. I mean, that is pretty much what Channing Crowder said. So right. Anybody who's in it and not that way, not going to sit there and just spend every minute coaching everybody else, but they're really in it for them to be as good as they can be. And if everyone would just do that, we'd be fine anyway. If everybody would just get in there and do everything they needed to do to be as good as they can be, that's enough, honestly. I mean, there's a few people. Tannehill, he has to be in it for the team as well as himself, because that's just a different kind of position. But Sue, we just need you to show up and be the future Hall of Famer you're probably going to be. That's it. That's all we need. So I really don't care that Heath Evans thinks he's not a locker room guy, but no one else has said that. No one else. Yes, he's known on the field to be a dirty player, and he's an aggressive player, and I don't think that's going to stop this year. So Philbin just better get used to it that you're probably going to get a penalty or two from this guy. He's going to give you that, but for all of that little bit of consequence he gives you so much advantage with the way he plays, so let him play that way. I mean, that's what you got to do with him.
I totally agree. There's a phrase that every coach that I have ever played for has always said, and it's a phrase that every coach, if you watch them on TV, they will say the same thing. I guess it's like genetically injected into people that are going to be a coach, and that is, do your job. If Sue does his job, we got no problems. I agree with you completely. There's no reason that he has to. I mean, yes, when you're on a team, it's all about the team. It's what you do to help the team. But the point of that is if you do your job, you're helping the team.
Thank you. Exactly. If you just do your job, and you shouldn't need a coach.
Depend on you to do one or two more things. Mm-hmm. If you do those, you're good.
Yeah, you shouldn't need the coach to stand up there and go rah rah re before every game, every halftime, every practice to get motivated. I'm sorry, you just shouldn't need that. I understand that it doesn't hurt. I understand that there are coaches that players get behind more than other coaches. I'm sure Tomlin was one of those guys. I know Tomlin's one of those guys where he's just... Sperano was one of those guys, let's face it. He sometimes maybe got more out of his players than some other coaches might have because of just the fact that his players would just run through a wall for him. But it's the NFL. It's not high school.
But, you know, even with that being said, you know, I don't think a coach should have to stand up to, like you said, before every game, at halftime, sit there and say constantly, rah, rah, ree, you know, let's kick him in the knee. You know,
rah, rah, rass, kick him in the other knee. Sorry. It's not my dad.
I don't think that that's necessary because you're playing football, at least in a perfect world. You're playing football because you like competition. You're playing sports because you like to win. You know, Herm Edwards, you play to win the game. Okay,
you don't just play it. Okay? You play to win.
You play to win the game. You don't go out there on a Sunday afternoon and say, "Yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and get on a field that's 115 degrees in the middle of summer in the afternoon in Miami, and I'm going to sweat and get hit and get punched and get bit and get kicked and all that stuff just to do it." You do it with a goal in mind. The goal is to win the game. So, does a coach really need to stand up there and say, "Come on, guys, let's give it our all"? No. Why? If a coach has to do that to a player that is a professional football player, that player needs to get out of the league. You need to find another job.
I agree. But is Philbin, if we determine that Philbin's not a coach, I don't know that it's just because he's not a rah-rah-ree, let's go get him motivating coach. There's probably other factors involved that he just doesn't get his team ready to play on Sundays.
I agree.
Whatever that looks like, I don't know.
You know, it could be, and we've heard some players mention, you know, there were some players that mentioned after the season last year that they didn't feel confident, you know, going down the stretch, that the plays that were being called made sense. We talked about this before where, and I'll go back to the Tannehill show, where you had mentioned about, you know, whose fault is it? Is it Tannehill's or the receivers when you're throwing a 5-yard out when you need 11 yards for a first down? Okay, and I had mentioned, well, if the play call was a 5-yard out, whose fault is that?
Yeah, that's the player's fault.
You know, it's one of those things where why are we running a 5-yard? Why are we calling 5-yard outs when we've got 11 yards to get a first down on third? Why would you do that?
But they still
that's
got
a play call.
They still got to run what's called. You start. No, you got players going out doing more than they think they should go. No, I got to do this. That's when things get crazy.
And that's what I'm saying though. Who's calling those plays? The players aren't saying, "Well, I'm going to run a 5-yard out." This isn't background football.
The coordinators are running the play, are calling the plays in Miami. The coordinators are running
right
on both sides,
but
Coyle and Laser.
If you see this play, and we saw it last year happen routinely, because I remember watching games. I remember sitting at B Dubs watching football games up here because obviously we get no television coverage in Tennessee for Miami Dolphin football unless they're playing the Titans. But I'm sitting at B Dubs and I'm watching his third down and 12, and we're throwing a 5-yard slant. Okay,
now is
so,
that? I mean, there's going to be different routes run. Not everyone's going to go run a 12-yard route. Is that Tannehill's fault? Maybe he's just taking the 5 yards and saying, you know what, whatever was open is not open. That's the thing. It's so hard to know, man. It's so hard for us to know, not playing or not actually being there, not knowing exactly how the play was called, what the read was, what the receivers were supposed to do if he saw this or that, what the quarterback was supposed to do if he saw this
and
or that.
And
it's just so hard for us to know.
But you're absolutely right. But, I remember watching breakdown film on ESPN, you know, after, you know, on Monday when they'll go through and they'll sit there and they'll go through certain plays of the game and they'll look at this. And I remember against the Jets, it was third down and 10. They showed the wide open view of the field,
mm-hmm.
and they showed the play. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember who it was that was analyzing the play. Every single receiver. And the wideouts did like a 10-yard curl over the top. The problem was the 10-yard curl, it brought him back into 8 yards. So it wasn't even enough to get the first down. Why would you call that?
I have no idea.
I'm not an offensive coordinator. I obviously don't get paid the money they do. I get that. I understand it. But in my mind, which is a very virgin football mind compared to these coordinators and people making millions of dollars a year, I'm thinking if I got to get 10 yards for a first down and it's third down and I'm not in a four down situation, I'm going to try to get the first down on this down because I'm deep in my own territory, whatever the case may be. The game's close. I don't want to risk it on fourth down, whatever. Why are we running 5-yard routes?
I don't know, man. You know what? It's last year, man. I can't even get into these play calling anymore. Let's just hope whatever thing like that, they fixed it. And those things are going to happen sometimes. We don't know exactly whose fault it is, but I guarantee you this year there's going to be situations like that. Like, it just happens. I think it happens on every team. I don't know if we can pick that kind of stuff to death and say Philbin's not our coach because we did that. Or we did this. I think it's the eyeball test. When we lace up for that game against the Redskins, that first game of the season, what does this team look like? When we start watching that first quarter, what do our eyes tell us this offense looks like? What do our eyes tell us this defense looks like? I really think that's going to be the most important thing. Because you can clearly see the difference in this offense now. Just like, let's take last year. You can see with your eyes the way the offense executes in general, the way it looks on the field, compared to what our offense looked like when we had Henny and Sperano. Like, it's as night and day. And I remember when we had Henny and Sperano, and I would watch some of these really good offenses, and I'd just be like, dang, how come we don't look like that? Because we just didn't have the right coordinators, we didn't have the right game plans, we didn't have the right quarterback, we didn't have the right receivers, we didn't have the right anything. But now you start to see that we do have a lot of the right pieces. So I really think it's heading in the right direction. Now it's a matter of executing more, being more consistent. How much of that is the players? How much of that is the coach? I don't know if anyone ever really knows. Obviously, you can't fire a whole team because you go 8-8. So the coach is going to take the brunt of that if that happens. I really don't think it's going to happen, though. Keith, I think that we might be having this conversation for nothing. Honestly, I think we're winning 10 games this year.
But the way you're talking about this offense and this defense, why are you limited to 10 games? You're talking the way you're
I'm trying to reserve. I'm trying defense. To I'm trying to not be I'm trying to you know me. You know
yes,
me.
And then
I honestly, I mean, you know, okay. So before the first game that week, I'm going to get on here and I'm going to say, okay, here's what I think is going to happen and here's what I think the score is going to be. Now, on this podcast, I'm going to say, okay, I think we win 27-17. That's what I'm probably going to say out loud. But in my mind, I really think we're going to win 45-3. I really think we're going to go out there and show the NFL what is up and destroy those sorry Redskins and sorry RG3. Yeah, you're right. Shanahan was right to want to draft Tannehill over your sorry butts. You stink. Get out. That's how I feel. I mean, I feel like the Dolphins are just going to run over Washington. But
okay.
I'm not going to be crazy, so I'm going to give us the win, of course, and say we win by 10 or 13 points, be conservative, and
27 points is conservative.
27 to 17. That's yeah. We're gonna get 27. We're scoring 27 points.
27 points is conservative for this team, who's famous for putting up 13, 16.
Yeah, but we averaged 25 points last year. So I mean, we could put some points up.
We could.
We could put. We could. Gotta put some points up, man.
I mean, we and listen, you know, you're absolutely right. We could. I could win Powerball Saturday. Probably not going to happen.
Really, you're going to sit here and tell me as a Dolphins fan, you think that the Dolphins putting up 27 points equates to you winning Powerball. You need to get off my show, man. You need to get off my show.
My point
talk of that
is
crap.
This.
Come
my
on,
point
man.
Is this. My point is this. I do not see us putting up 27 points first game.
Oh, dude, we're going to put up way more. I'm telling you right now, we're going to put up way more than that.
Listen, I don't see us putting up 27 points second game. I'll tell you why.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to let you talk somehow, some way. I'm going to try and shut my mouth, but you got to make it quick because you got like a minute, and then I got to start talking. Go. You got a
okay.
minute.
Okay. Listen.
Now it's too late. No. No. Sorry. Okay. I couldn't wait. No, go ahead, dude.
I just think there's going to be some hiccups with this offense for the first couple weeks, okay? You can motion on FaceTime all you want. But I just think that there's going to be a couple hiccups until timing gets down. Because, listen, you can perform all you want to on the practice field. And we've gone to plenty of practices where we've seen that offense just look, I mean, you were thinking, holy cow, this is like, these guys are just going right down the field. This is awesome. Come game time, it's totally different. It's a totally different mindset. I see us winning. Yes, absolutely. I see us winning. I don't see us throwing up 27 points first game of the season. I think that we'll score 17-20. 20's pushing it.
Dude, you're crazy. Your minute's up. You're crazy. Okay, so let me explain to you why 27 is like a bare minimum for the first game. Because
okay.
that defense is going to give that offense a lot of short fields. That's number one. A lot of three and outs. A lot of time. That time of possession for Miami is going to be pretty heavy. That is the reason why we will score at least 27 points. They're going to get the ball plenty. They're going to have plenty of opportunity to score. That's one of the biggest reasons. Yeah, you didn't think about that, did you? That defense shutting down RG3. Sorry, bud.
Listen, I've thought about that. I'm surprised. I'm more surprised that you gave Washington 17 points and us 27 than if you would have given Washington 0 to 6 points.
They're at home. They have a coach that's a pretty decent offensive coordinator. They have a really good running back, although I don't know how effective he'll be running up the middle. But Morris is pretty good. I could see them maybe getting 17 points. That's like a max. That's a max. I mean, I'm giving them. That's the most points they're gonna score.
See, I'm gonna disagree. I'm gonna disagree with you because when this show first started and I talked about that defensive line and nobody running on us, unless you're AP, Morris is no AP.
No, he's not. But he is one of the better backs in the league. He's one of
absolutely.
The better backs we'll face this year, probably.
Absolutely. But I'm telling you now, Morris, and you can mark it down. Today's date, I said it on the show, Washington's running game is going to be a non-factor against the Redskins.
Well, then they ain't scoring 17 points on us.
We are going to force RG3 to beat us, and the only thing that worries me about RG3 is not his arm. That doesn't bother me. Is if we can't contain him in the pocket and make him throw the ball, that's going to concern me a little bit. I know he's not the RG3 that come out of college because of the injuries. I totally get it. I totally get that. However, in the past, I know it's a different defense. In the past, running quarterbacks have hurt us.
Yeah, but I don't think they want him to run. I think they're going to hurt themselves. Washington will hurt themselves trying to force RG3 inside the pocket to throw from the pocket. Yeah, that's not going to be very good for them. Not against
then
us.
Then Washington doesn't score 17 points.
Because Sue's going to be in his face all day. And Brent and Rashad and all them are going to be picking off those horrible throws because he's an inaccurate quarterback. He does not throw well with pressure. He does not do well when he has a bunch of guys in his face. He does not do well when he has a bunch of guys beating him up, when he has Cam. Oh, my. It's going to be ugly for them, man. It's going to be like Washington is going to be freaking out after they play us. And then after a few games happens, they're going to be like, oh, I get it. Miami's just a good team. It wasn't just that we were bad.
Then why are you giving them 17 points?
I'm trying to be conservative here, man. I told you I want to say 45-3. All right, hey, let's talk about something. Okay, enough about Washington.
Okay.
Let's talk about something else. All right, we're doing the practice. Dolphins, not the game, practice. Carolina, I think if the dates were August 19th and 20th. Okay. I'm just a short 9.5 hours away from Wofford College in Spartanburg. I think it was Spartanburg, South Carolina. And you're an even shorter 5.5 hours away.
It's 357 miles.
It's two practices. Yeah, you haven't checked it out. It's two practices, one day, then another day, dude. What do you say?
Dude, I've already got the days off from work. Made it happen yesterday.
Sweet. It's going to be awesome. I don't know how I'm going to pull this one off with my wife. You're going to, you know, what? She was already, dude, she was already getting on me about, I spent some money for the podcast. I got it. You don't know this because right now we're recording the show, but for anybody who is listening now, you heard the new professionally recorded intro for the show. I went out and spent a little cash trying to improve the show a little. The purpose of that is to, so people don't say, oh, a Miami Dolphins podcast. They hit play, then they hear the intro and they hit delete. So I'm trying to avoid that.
He went out and spent a little money to make it a game changer.
That's right. So I got to pull this one off. You're going where? To watch practice? You can watch practice down in Miami. Yeah, but not against another team. So that would be cool, dude. If we did that, that'd be a lot of fun. I know there's going to be some Dolphins fans coming up for that. I wish they were doing it in Miami, but we're playing the game in Carolina on that Saturday. So I think it's that Wednesday, Thursday, they're doing the two practices together.
Nice. Like I said, I'm down because what's funny is I've got the 2 days off for the practice. And with my schedule, the way the rotation is, I'm off that weekend. So,
well, lucky you.
I know. I wouldn't mind staying to catch the game, but I don't know, the two practices might be enough.
I don't even care about the game. I want to see the practices. I mean, it's just a preseason game. If it's a real game, it'd be a different story. I want to see the practices.
But yeah, 357 miles away from my front door, I could probably make it. I mean, Google, they got it all wrong. It ain't going to take me 5.5 hours to go 357 miles. But
I gotta hope Google has it wrong for me, man. 9.5 hours. That's a drive.
Feel my pain, brother. Feel my pain.
I might have
to
rent a car for that one. Put enough miles on my car.
I'm excited about it. It's gonna be definitely different because we've gone to so many practices down in Davie, you know, at the facility. But it's going to be different to actually go somewhere else to watch a practice. Them actually practice against another ball club. I'm excited about that. Yeah, I mean, August can't get here fast enough.
We haven't done that since 2004. Not us, but I mean, the team hasn't practiced against another team since 2004. And that was something we used to regularly do in the Shula days and even in some of the Jimmy Johnson days. And I think a little bit with Wanstead, whatever his name was. But we never did it under Esperano. We haven't done it to this point under Philbin. But, I mean, remember last year, the Patriots did that against Philly.
Yes.
Which was smart because the first game was against us and we were running the same offense.
Yes.
I mean, it didn't help them win.
No, but it didn't. But
maybe it helped them. It helped them lose less. I don't know. Something like
that. I mean, it's exciting to go somewhere else. You know, it's, you know, a little road trip to go watch them play. And
I wish we were doing the road trip together. That would be more fun, but it doesn't make really sense for you to come down here to go up there. That makes zero sense.
No, and I mean, you know, on a personal level, there's a possibility I may be in Florida in August.
Well, you better be in Florida in August because we're supposed to go to some practices in Davie anyway.
I know. So, I mean, I may be down there permanently.
Oh, you mean permanently? Oh, then we would do it together. Oh, that'd be cool. When is that going to happen? When are you getting out of your Tennessee 10x10 and get back to Florida?
Well, I'm working on it, man. I didn't figure a transfer was going to be this difficult, but it is what it is. It takes a little bit of time, but if I had to put a time frame on it, I would probably say 4 to 6 weeks.
Well, that'd be August.
That would be we would actually go up there. It'd probably be about a week before we got up there. So I already had the times off, and the good part about that is even if I do transfer down there, I've already put in for those days off, so those would transfer to my new store with me. So I mean, I'm golden with that.
Nice.
It would it'd be better to take the road trip, you know, with my boy from
down
there.
Yeah, it would be more fun. So then I'm going to hope that you come down, because that'll be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right, dude. What are you most nervous about on this team? Before we start to wrap this up a little here, what's got you the most concerned? I don't even know why I have to ask the question, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway in case you say like the punter or something stupid like that.
The sad part is I was going to throw it out to say special teams. No,
the kicker. Yeah, besides the kicker. Yeah,
you know, the kicker. Finkel. No, but but I'm going to have to say the O-line.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much more energy I can put into thinking about this O-line. I mean, by the time O-line, somebody hears this, maybe Mathis has already signed somewhere else, and maybe by the grace of God, he's signed with us. I don't see it, though. I'll be honest with you. And whatever's going to happen has probably already happened by the time someone hears this. Maybe not. I was listening to Drew Rosenhaus, and he's saying he's Mathis's agent. Mm-hmm. Mathis could sign anywhere from tomorrow till right up to training camp. It could be 5 weeks before this guy signs. He wants money, man. That's why I don't think he's coming to Miami. There's teams out there that are willing to give him more money than we can afford to give him, or maybe even willing to.
Yeah, I just, you know, at first I was kind of curious when, you know, I saw on Bleach Report and a couple other reports that, you know, Miami should go after Mathis.
Well, we should. I just don't know if we can get him.
And at first I was sitting back wondering, you know, I'm looking at our needs. I'm looking at the caliber of player Mathis is. We need that guy. That guy would be an instant fix on our offensive line.
Yeah, because if we could just find one guy, let's say the left guard. Okay, we bring him in, he plays left guard. Then out of Thomas, Douglas, and Turner, just one of those guys, they have to battle each other for the other spot. Now, I feel a lot better about that than those three guys battling for two spots. And Lincoln Box involved in that too.
True.
I mean, I'm almost kind of conceited that Lincoln Box is going to take one of the spots. He's either going to be left guard or right guard. It's just going to happen. I've kind of conceded that, but that's just me.
I'm like you. The more and more I've looked at it, I don't think that we can afford Mathis. Not with the money we've spent with Sue, and I don't think that we can afford to bring Mathis on board. I wished we could, but then again, I haven't even heard any talk about Mathis even talking to Miami.
I've read a bunch of different articles on this. I've read a few articles that didn't. Oh, I read one article that did not mention us. Every other article mentioned us. Rosenhaus says that 10 teams have expressed interest. The article I read had Kansas City, Indianapolis, us, and I can't remember the other team. Maybe it was Seattle. I was just reading it this morning. But then I also then read that Indianapolis didn't have the money and Kansas City bowed out for some other reason, which left us and another team. But I don't think it's just us and another team. I'm not going to say he doesn't care about winning. I don't know the guy personally, so I don't want to say that. I'm just telling you, on his priority list is how much money he brings in. He just walked away from some decent money. Walked away. He was cut, but he wanted to be cut. He walked away, in essence, from some decent money. He's not taking chump change. He's going to the highest bidder. That could be the Raiders or something. That could be Tampa. That could be a team that has money. You know what I mean? I could see that. I could see him in Buffalo because they went so hard after Collins, even though Buffalo has not been talked about. You could see him for the Giants because I believe the Giants recently lost a guy. Denver lost a guy, but they're tight on the cap. Denver was the other team that was mentioned in that one article. You could see Tampa because they got money. Wouldn't mind having a nice left guard for a couple years for Winston in his first season. You could see the Raiders just because they got money. I mean, look at all the players that went to the Raiders just to go to the Raiders. Why? Because they were getting them the best deal. The Jags, I believe, have some money. I could see there being 10. I could easily see there being 10 teams. Miami was going to have to move stuff around to get them. We have like $8 million cap right now. We have $155 million promised to players for next year, and the cap is expected to be $150 million, and that's with 47 guys, and that's before you've signed rookies. Then you're going to add him in too? It could be. I don't see it, man. But I don't want to get into a big, long Mathis conversation because by the time people hear this, it's probably already happened. But bottom line is, we're probably going to be riding with what we got, and then maybe bringing in some kind of second tier vet like we did last year with college.
Right.
That's probably what they're going to end up doing between now and training camp.
And I mean,
and we're going to be band-aided again at the guard spot.
But we've got a good offensive line coach, I think.
Benton's great coach. That was a steal. We got lucky because obviously when you have a coaching change like they did in Houston 2 years ago, unfortunately even good position coaches lose their jobs. Even if they're the best, they lose their jobs. They almost never retain these guys when you change coaches, and that's what happened with Benton. So that was just perfect because he did all right. That offensive line could have been worse last year, especially after Albert went down, and it wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible. So
it wasn't. I mean, it was manageable. Tannehill wasn't on his back all that often. I mean,
he was still on his back more than we need him to be, though. That's the problem.
Well, true. Yes. But I mean, he wasn't on his back like it was a few years ago.
Oh God, no. I think more the problem was when we get in these short. We need third and two. We're in the red zone, and we need to run some short yardage to get some first downs to get a touchdown. That's what makes me more nervous about the line than even protecting Tannehill. Even though it is important to protect him, I hate the way we're just struggle for those short yardage, and I'd love to see us shore up at least one of those guard spots. I just don't understand why it's so hard to find a freaking guard. It's just most of these guards are third, fourth, fifth round undrafted guys throughout the league. We can't find one freaking guard.
We talked about it before. You know, you can see, you can kind of see how the team is being molded around an offensive line that isn't the greatest. But the weapons now, I mean, we've got two backs specifically, your boy and Miller, mm-hmm. that can come out of the backfield that can block because Miller's beefed up. He's beefed up in the offseason.
Here's my opinion on that. I don't personally like when a player goes out and sets out to do everything they can do to try and get better at something they're not good at, and it possibly hurts what they already do well. Miller can beef up all he wants. He is not an inside runner. He is not a 25 touches a game guy, and he is just not a great blocker, pass protector. So now you beef up to try and get better at those things. But do you give up what you already did well? And it's kind of like what, and I hate to say the name, it's kind of like what Deion Jordan was trying to do last year when he got busted with the roids. You know, he's trying to beef up to be something he's not. So then maybe he gets a little better at what he does, but then he loses what he's already good at. And then what do you have? You have a mediocre player. I don't know if I like that, man. I understand that Miller packed on some muscle. Maybe it'll help him. I'm sure he's just trying to get better at running inside, but does it affect what he already does well? I mean, you've got some guys that could run inside a little bit more now. I'd rather have seen Miller just do what you do. You know, I don't see Tannehill doing that. Tannehill knows he doesn't throw the deep ball that well. You see him sitting there trying to throw the deep ball 25 times a game because he doesn't throw the deep ball well, so he's trying to connect. No, he knows what he is. He knows what he does well. He works on getting even better at what he is already very good at. I don't like it when players try and do that. I think it just makes them mediocre across the board, and it doesn't help them. And I don't recall any player ever being really bad or, you know, kind of bad at something like Miller is at pass protection, like Miller is not an inside runner, and then all of a sudden, one offseason, they pack on some muscle, and now they're Superman. That has never happened, and it is never going to happen. Right. So I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not super excited about that Miller has packed on this muscle, and I know that's probably a different view than most people have, so we're going to see how that plays out.
I like the idea of him packing on some muscle. I just think that I like the idea for breaking tackles, because remember last year, quick, he was shifty, and that's great, but as soon as he got hit, he wasn't a big tackle breaker. He would get hit, and then next thing you know, he would go down 2, 3, 4 yards short of the first down marker. Mm-hmm. Pack on a little bit more muscle. Maybe he absorbs that hit and he gets an extra 3 yards before he gets waylaid by a linebacker. or, you know, maybe he's able to bounce off a couple more tackles trying to run it up inside, where he's able to get 5, 6, 7 yards as opposed to 3 or 4 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about the muscle only because it will give him an opportunity, possibly give him an opportunity to get more yards after contact than just taking the first hit and going down, which he did quite a bit last year. I don't think he was a big tackle breaker last year. And I think you could see the frustration when he would get hit by one person and he would go down. You could see the frustration that, you know, if I could have got by him, that's an extra 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe. We'll see.
Well, you know what? We'll see how that plays out, but you know my opinion on it. So we'll see. And not that I don't like Miller. I like Miller. I think he's a really good player. Right. He had a good season last year.
Yeah, he did.
But you are what you are. So focus on that. When you do things well enough to run for 1,100 yards, why do you want to chance hurting yourself? Because you put on more weight and more muscle, you're going to get a little slower. You're going to get a little less shifty. You just are.
You know how many touchdowns he had last year by chance?
I actually do not have a clue. I don't think it was a lot. I mean, I know it wasn't any double digits or anything.
No. That's for sure. I mean, I kind of look at it from the perspective of, you know, he got 1,100 yards. Well, if he got 900 yards, but he got 5 more touchdowns, I'll lose 200 yards to get 5 more touchdowns all day long.
If they're red zone hard yards, yeah, I'd take that. We'll see how that plays out, though. I still say that when it comes down to it, you're not going to see him a lot when you get deep into the red zone. When you start to get within the 10 or the 5, I don't know I don't know how much you see Miller and more you might see Ajayi Williams, maybe even LaMichael James. We've got a lot of backs, man. That's a nice deep unit, yeah, in my opinion. I'm not that concerned about, oh, we just need Miller to go out and pack on muscle and do everything. We don't need him to do everything. We just need him to do what he did last year. He did what he did last year, but we can get some of those tougher yards through some of the other guys. I'm fine with that. And I think we need somebody to come in and at least pretend, play faux fullback. I don't like that we never have a lead blocker for these guys. We need somebody. I mean, I don't know who that is. It might even be a defensive player. Somebody needs to come in and block a little. But
I agree.
I know that's not really our offensive scheme. I just wish they would do that sometimes. You know, give this guy a lead blocker to punch in some of those, especially because you don't have the strongest of interior line. I mean, guard position. Obviously, you got Pouncey. So we'll see. Or anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, man, that's about it. I'm already looking forward to August and going to that practice in South Carolina. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
You got to talk to my wife for me, man. You got to help me out here.
I'll smooth it over with you. Have her give me a
shout. You've known her longer than I have, so you know that should work out.
Have her give me a shout.
Okay, I will. I will, dude. All right, this has been Unsquish the Fish. If you do want to email us, it's unsquishthefish@gmail. Follow me on Twitter at unsquishthefish. If you follow me, I'll give you a follow back. We can chat back and forth. I'm glad you listened to another episode. Appreciate it. Appreciate all the listeners, all the downloads. Things have really been going great with the show. I'm very excited. And we will see you guys next time.